Series. Soler will take the trip, and he puts Atlanta up 1-0 with a first swing of the Fall Classic. Valdez just trying to fight to stay in the game. This one is a rocket into left and gone. 5-0 Atlanta here in the third inning as Duvall goes deep.
And that's how it started last night, the World Series Game 1. And we actually talked about it right here on the show yesterday. I brought it up that Jorge Soler could be a big factor in the World Series. I had a friend of mine text me and said, man, you nailed that one. I said, well, I get one every once in a blue moon. So Jorge Soler with the first at bat, first time ever in the World Series that the first batter of the World Series hit a home run. And you may say, well, wait a minute, I'm a Royals fan. Alcides Escobar hit inside the park homer. That was the bottom of the first. Not the first batter
when
of the game.
When they said that, I was like, I was bottom of the first.
That's
right. Right when they said that, I was like, yeah.
Because the Royals were at home.
Top of the first, yeah.
Home against the Mets in game one, which should have been, honestly, an air, not an inside the park home run.
Yeah, for sure.
I was there to see it live, and I'm sure it looked the same way on television. And that
probably
was,
looks worse on TV.
Yeah. It's just, I saw it live, and I thought it was an air, too. Yeah. It was just horrible outfield defense by the Mets.
I'll
never forget Matt Harvey serving up a fastball when you knew Escobar loves fastballs on a first pitch. It's like that kind of set the tone for the whole World Series, to be quite honest with you. It was quite the way. People hadn't even got down in their seats, honestly, because there was a rain delay that night. We didn't know if we were going to play. They backed it up a little bit, and all of a sudden, boom, it's 1-0 Royals. First batter, like, hey, this is a good omen. And it worked out pretty well for the Royals. And I'm getting memories now for years later on Facebook. Today is when I was with the guy with the moose hat head and everything, and then the guy that had the moose antlers, remember that, in the stands all the time?
Uh-huh.
And then the guy that wore the tiger on his outfit that he has and on the front with suspenders and everything. Yeah, we got pictures with him. Stu and I were at the game, and we got pictures, and that showed up on my timeline, memories on Facebook today. So those were good times. Hard to believe that was 6 years ago, the Royals won the World Series. But last night, game one goes to the Atlanta Braves. I'm very pleased with that and happy to see Jorge Soler hit the home run, former Royal. Pretty wild. At one point, you had all Royals dealing. Let me explain this. Jake Odorizzi was pitching. Martin Maldonado was catching for the Astros, former Royals. And the hitter was Jorge Soler.
Yeah.
And then guess who closed the game last night? Will Smith.
Yeah.
Former Royal as well. People might not know that. So a lot of former Royals that were involved. There's probably a few more than that, but those are the ones that stood out to me. But Soler with the solar power, and the Braves beat the Astros last night by a final of 6-2. Got the early lead, and Brian Snitker, manager of the Braves, no lead is safe with the Astros.
No, it's good, but you know, against this club here, it's you know, they got. I'd rather get a 5-0 lead after the seventh inning than when we did, because they have so much time to come back, and it's such a dangerous team. And you don't, that 5-0 feels like 1-0, quite honestly, to me, just because of the club they are, and they've been through these wars, and they're so dangerous, and they're so relentless, which makes it even more special, and to me, and what our bullpen did.
Bullpen was outstanding for the Braves last night. The only problem is it came with a cost, the win. Charlie Morton, their number one starter, he fractured his fibula. He actually threw like 16 more pitches after that happened and got outs. Pretty amazing stuff. But on a comebacker, hit off his leg, didn't look too serious at first. He's out for the rest of the postseason. That's a big blow for the Braves, and that's why they really had to win last night after he did depart. And the Braves' bullpen was awesome for 6 2/3. The question is, do they have enough arms to get through this very high-powered Houston Astros offense? We shall see. Soler was a DH. He'll only play in 4 of the 7 games unless they put him in the outfield. But Alvarez, who's an outstanding stud and great young power hitter for the Astros, who plays DH for the Astros. And you go to the National League Park, they're going to have to find a way to put him in the field because they're going to win his bat. So that'll make you worse defensively. And that's the old yin and yang of having the DH at the American League Park and then having to have the pitchers hit in the National League Park. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. But the Braves get it done last night, final of 6-2. So it is game two coming up tonight. And it is 7:09 first pitch as the Braves will go Max Fried, one of their best starters, very talented lefty. And Jose Arrieta will pitch for the Astros. He wasn't really good his last time out. And Framber Valdez was the number one starter last night. Didn't get through the third. Here's Dusty Baker on his starter's struggles.
You know, they started off with the home run in the first batter, and then made a couple pitches, you know, the 3-0 double, and then the changeup that he left up. He probably threw a little bit too hard, and it ends up being a nothing fastball. And so, you know, we had to go get him at that point.
Go Braves. And before you sit here and say, well, the Braves are going to own the series if they win the first two games on the road, do you remember a World Series just a couple years ago where the road team won all seven? Guess who was involved in that? Astros?
The Astros.
With the Nationals. Yeah. And the Nationals won in seven. So should be interesting. World Series game two coming up tonight. Stay tuned. K-State in focus. Plus, release the Kraken and Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest will join us in about 15 minutes. Talk Chiefs. Have plenty to talk to him about, obviously, with the Chiefs struggles. Royals outfielder Bubba Starling announced his retirement in a post on Facebook this week. The 29-year-old played in 27 games with AAA Omaha this past season, but left the team this summer to represent Team USA in the Summer Olympics in Japan, earning a silver medal. Starling excelled as a three-sport athlete at Gardner-Edgerton High School in the KC metro area. He was one of the top-ranked baseball draft prospects in 2011, and his hometown Royals made him the fifth overall pick in the draft. Starling had multiple D1 offers to play football, including University of Nebraska, but he turned them down to sign a $7.5 million bonus, the largest in club history. Starling performed well in his first two seasons, struggled with high strikeout rates at the higher levels. His speed and defense gave the front office hopes he could rise quickly to the bigs, but his bat didn't quite develop as they would have hoped, and some injury setbacks added further obstacles. Starling finally reached the big leagues in 2019 at the age of 26, receiving semi-regular playing time. He played in 91 games for the Royals in two seasons, hitting .204, hit five home runs. Bubba Starling didn't have quite the career many envisioned when he was drafted, but he is one of just a small percentage of athletes who reached the big leagues and is an Olympic medalist. That's a great point. You know, Dusty and I were talking about this down the hallway yesterday. There are Royals fans and many people in baseball that are going to say that Bubba Starling is a failure.
Yes.
And they would be wrong. They would be wrong. It's like Stephen A. Smith ripping Kwame Brown because he was a number one overall pick of the NBA. Kwame Brown came back. He clapped back at Stephen A. and he said, I'm a failure. I made millions of dollars. I've given a lot back to my community. I helped do things in my community. I'm very happy where I am. And I would say I'm happier than a lot of people in this world. How am I a failure again? And he makes a great point. Listen, this is what happens with fans and even organizations and media people. You assume that the guy that got drafted at the top wants to be the greatest ever. And odds are most of them don't. Because it's a job, and people forget this. No, well, it's just a game. No. At the professional level, it is a job. Is it a game? Is it a sport? Sure, but it is a job. When you go to school, what's your job? What's your main goal? Is to get the education you need in order to make money for a living, right?
Yes.
So when you go to the pros and get a big league contract like Bubba Starling did, and if you're Kwame Brown, what did you just accomplish? When you signed that contract, what did you just receive? Your first job.
Yeah.
Your first job. That's your job offer, all right? You were drafted. Now, are there high expectations? Of course there are. You know, based on the production you would hope to get from the fifth overall pick in 2011, Bubba Starling is a bust. That would be true. But when you talk about Bubba Starling the person, how is he a failure? Bubba Starling was an unbelievable athlete who could have played college football or pro baseball, got a $7.5 million at the age of 18. I'm hard to say that's a failure. And then he goes to plays a sport that he loved and he preferred to play. He struggled. He fought through it for many years. In fact, almost a decade he fought through it. He did get to the bigs, which is very difficult to do, even if you are a number one or top five pick. There are top picks in the baseball draft in the past that never made it to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Blew out their arm, got hurt, got addicted to drugs. Who knows what might have happened, okay? Lost their Ash Russell was a first-round pick. He's never made it to the bigs. I don't even know if he's pitching anymore for the Royals, because he had all kinds of issues and too much pressure. Zach Greinke nearly saw his career derailed before he ever got started early in his career, and now he's a guy that, I don't know, he pitches a few more years, he might be on the borderline of a Hall of Famer, and he's going to pitch in this World Series at some point for the Astros. So when you sit here and you say Bubba Starling is a failure or Kwame Brown is a failure, or if you say Ben Simmons is a failure, okay, to make it something more current, if you say those people are failures, they're only failures to you because your expectations were that they wanted to be the greatest and they failed at doing that, that they were supposed to be the fifth overall pick in the draft. And what you don't know is Bubba Starling might have been like, my goal isn't to be an all-star. My goal is to be a serviceable Major League Baseball player. Or maybe his goal was to be the greatest ever and it just didn't work out. I don't think it was a lack of effort. I really don't. Sometimes it doesn't work. People don't understand. It is extremely tough to play professional sports. I don't even know. Okay, all I know is it's not easy to hit a baseball. I can tell you that right now. Very, very difficult. When 7 out of 10 times you fail and you're considered a success, how is Bubba Starling a failure when he made it to the big leagues? I know he only played in 91 games, but he made it. There are a lot of people that are super talented that don't even make it to the big leagues. It is hard in baseball. It's harder, honestly, than probably any other sport to make it to the big leagues. Because when you 30% of the time you're successful, and that's if you're lucky, 30% of the time you're successful and 70% of the time you fail, that should tell you all you need to know about how tough it is to play baseball. Okay? So Bubba Starling, in my eyes, is not a failure. Is he a bust based on the draft position? Yes. And I remember in 2011, I didn't like the pick because I thought the Royals took the homegrown guy, and I thought Gardner Edgerton wasn't really the best competition at that level that Bubba Starling dominated, but I didn't think it was like the greatest competition compared to other draft picks that played at other places. So I really didn't like the pick. I love Bubba Starling, but I really didn't. I don't know. I don't think I ever thought Bubba Starling was going to be a superstar. I never did feel that way. And with the fifth overall pick, that's what you're looking for, is a superstar, a guy that's going to change your franchise. And you really, as a talent evaluator and a GM, you can't miss on those picks, and the Royals did. And that's part of the reason why it set them back for many years with all the failed first-round draft picks. They didn't really get it figured out until what? Moustakas and Hosmer, right? They got those right. Yeah. That made a big difference, didn't it? So when you look at what the Bubba Starling did, for him personally, complete success. Now, based on the organization's drafting him number 5 in 2011, that's a failure by the Royals organization, or maybe a failure by them to develop him. But I don't think it's because of a lack of effort or focus by Bubba Starling.
No.
He tried and he tried. He fought for 10 years, and he did eventually make it to the big leagues. So people need to keep that in mind. Francisco Lindor was available. The Royals passed on him. Now, in hindsight, wouldn't you say that was a better draft pick if it took Lindor? Of course you would. No doubt about it. No question about it. And that's, once again, going back to the GMs are in the business to get it right. And the Royals got it wrong. And that's not because Bubba Starling didn't try, not because he didn't care. It's just that it didn't work out for him to be a superstar. But most guys aren't superstars. I mean, there are superstars that were a 62nd-round pick like Mike Piazza. There are guys, Albert Pujols, I forgot what, in the round 30 or 40 he was drafted. He's a Hall of Famer. There is no guarantee at all. And if there's ever a crapshoot for first-round draft picks in sports, it's baseball. Absolute crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
You're lucky. You can have 3 first-round picks. If you get one to go to the big leagues and be serviceable for a decade, you've hit a home run. Baseball is a crapshoot when it comes to drafting. I mean, these guys are coming out of high school. I mean, they're a ways away. I mean, you talk about jumping from high school, they didn't even play college ball, and then they're going to be in the pros and be superstars. Now, Bobby Witt Jr. is an example of a guy that the Royals looks like they haven't missed on this one. But if he comes to the big leagues, he gets hurt, injury prone. If he ends up, struggling and have a mental block and decides he doesn't love the game anymore and retires abruptly, then the Royals missed.
Yeah.
So we sit here and think he's a can't-miss prospect. Some people thought that of Bubba Starling. I never did. But he has retired, and good for him. And he can count his money and enjoy it for the rest of his life at the age of 29. God, I would have loved to retire at the age of 29. I'd love to retire at the age of 49. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
But 29, pff, success.
Yeah, he can. I know he's a big fan of, like, hunting and fishing and stuff like that. He can
he
take
can
all that money
and hunt fish is all he wants.
Fish as long as he wants. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's kind of the direction he might go afterwards. But he didn't really give any indication of what he was going to do next. But, yeah, I mean, I'd be fine if I was Bubba Starling. I'd be content right now. You know, it didn't work out the way maybe he would have wanted from the success standpoint, I would guess. But, you know, he – from a success on the field, I should say.
Yeah.
But, you know, he got there. And, again, there's so many people that can't even say that. And it is. It's you're trusting that you're drafting high school guys that are – like you said, so far away, 5-6 years away probably.
In many cases.
On average, I would guess, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And you just can't anticipate what can happen in between there. Like, they could be really, really good for 4 years and on, like you said, Bobby Witt, on the right track, and then just something derails it with
I'll give you an example.
A Tommy John surgery, or, you know, something that happens there with an injury or something.
Have you watched the 30 for 30, the Queen story of the New York Mets?
I've not watched that
You
yet.
Need to watch yeah. that. When you have time, you need to watch
oh,
it.
Oh, if I get time
I know,
ever.
Not now. You don't have time now, but you will. In between football and basketball season, you'll have some time. I am, and you're a single guy. You don't have all the other things you got to worry about as a family guy. But I implore you to watch it. You talk about two guys that were can't-miss guys. Dwight Gooden was unbelievable. Okay, and Daryl Strawberry was unbelievable. And guess what happened to their careers?
To get derailed drug use. By drugs.
Drugs and partying and everything yeah. else. And Dwight Gooden wasn't even there for the parade when they won the World Series. And yeah. Dwight Gooden was a guy that was unhittable.
Yeah.
24-4 with ERA of 1 something.
All the time. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that guy was doing drugs most of the time in his career. And you don't know if guys are going to get addicted to drugs. I mean, the Mets hit a home run. They evaluated, drafted, got Dwight Gooden. He was unbelievable for a few years. And how are they supposed to know? And there's no way for them to know. The guy's going to get yeah. addicted to drugs and can't handle success. And the same thing with Daryl Strawberry. You have no idea. I mean, the Royals drafted Bubba Starling. They have no idea whether he's going to be a saint or if he's going to be a guy that's going to be a raging alcoholic that parties all the time. You don't know that. You hope so. But at 18, do you know that?
No.
I don't think so. Bubba Starling, by the way, was a tremendous athlete.
Still kids, honestly, at that age when in this
right.
idea of what we're talking about.
Bubba Starling was an amazing athlete, not just football, but I mean, he was, or not just baseball. He was, like I said, Nebraska wanted
football,
to be their quarterback.
Basketball. They said
if he was a stud in basketball,
he would have dominated in that too, but yeah. he played baseball in the spring.
One of the fastest players that some people have ever seen. And yeah, but that just shows you how hard it is to make it in a yeah. sport like baseball. A lot of rumors after a few years he was going to quit and go play football while he could, maybe at Nebraska. And I honestly, now you look back on it, you kind of wish he did to see what he would have done.
Well, Chris Wanky was like 29, wasn't he, when he was playing?
25 or 26. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's 29.
Like, Nebraska could probably use him next
year. Well, yeah, Chris Wanky, yeah. I mean, they might. Well, they're going to need a quarterback next year. That's true. Adrian Martinez has been there for, what, 9 years? Oh, wait a minute. Taylor Martinez, Adrian Martinez, they're twins. Yeah. All right, local sports, Dusty.
Yes, again, busy week this week. We'll get things started today with our high school football locker room chats. Tonight we'll talk to the head coaches of Beloit Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. That'll start around 5:10 to 5:15 this evening, and we'll continue the locker room chats tomorrow as well. And we'll start in the afternoon about 4:30. Coaches of St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. And then we'll get prepped for week 9 games coming up tomorrow night. Football Express at 5 o'clock, followed by pregame at 5:30, kickoff at 6, 8-man Division II playoff contest. First round on Katy Country 94, Osborne hosting Hanover, and on Z96.3 through the lake at Lakeside at Frankfort. And then Friday night, we'll continue on with our high school football coverage. 2A playoffs, Beloit hosting Lakin at 7 o'clock, pregame 6:30, Z96.3 through the lake at NCKSSports.com on the Beloit Trojan channel. And also Friday, as we've mentioned throughout the week, we have complete play-by-play coverage of state volleyball for Beloit and 3A on Katy Country 94 in the morning. First match will be about 9:30 there, and then Lakeside will be on Z96.3 and 1A Division I. First match 8:30, pre-match coverage beginning at 8:15 there on Z96.3 Friday morning. Then on Friday afternoon, we'll get things started with Smith Center at 4:30 and go into the evening with 2A state volleyball there on Katy Country 94. Full match and broadcast schedule can be found at nckssports.com.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. It is indeed time to focus on K-State athletics, brought to you by our friends at Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit as well. K-State pulls one out of the fire last weekend, down 24-10, comes back to win 25-24 at Texas Tech, and in the process got Texas Tech's head coach fired. So K-State still has their head coach, Chris Klieman. K-State breaking a three-game losing streak and going almost a year without winning a Big 12 game, in fact, over a year. They got it done at Texas Tech 25-24. K-State now 4-3, 1-3 in the Big 12, and have winnable games the next 3 weeks. TCU coming up on Saturday at 2:30, and that one will be in Manhattan. And then after that, at KU, West Virginia at home. Those certainly are winnable ball games for Kansas State. Chris Klieman on TCU and the Horned Frogs.
We look at TCU as a whole of – we've played them really tight ball games the last 2 years, found a way to come away with victories, but they could have gone either way. And they're just such a well-coached, physical, athletic team that We've got to have great plans. Doesn't matter who they're playing against. You know, you look at the games against Texas and OU and Texas Tech, the amount of explosive plays, the 30, the 40, the 60-yard plays that they get against people, rushing the football with two phenomenal running backs and throwing the ball and getting explosive plays with the wide receiver. And I'm a big Max Duggan fan. I think Max is a great competitor, a really good quarterback, excellent runner, can beat you running it and throwing it. Been a fan of his since the time he played here as a true freshman and made some plays against us, and I think he's a great competitor.
TCU's been up and down this year. They lost to West Virginia last week. Their defense really struggled. TCU seems to be a team kind of like Iowa State the last few years, except more as expected of Iowa State. But every year I see, TCU, you know, they might be able to challenge for the Big 12 title. They're going to be a top three or top four team. And the last few years they haven't lived up to the expectations. Whether those are just unfair expectations, I don't know. But TCU has not been really that great the last few years.
No, I don't think the expectations are unfair. They've been there before,
right?
You know. But, yeah, it's just not – for some, one reason or the other, it's just not been coming to fruition over the last couple of years. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if he's missing on recruits or what the issue is there. But, yeah, they're definitely underperforming this year for sure.
TCU's 3-4 overall, 1-3 in conference play. You look back at their schedule, lost to SMU, lost to Texas by 5, could easily won that. Lost by 21 Oklahoma, although they were in that game about probably late in the third quarter. And then West Virginia didn't play well. And so they kind of up and down. I mean, they played okay against Oklahoma for a while. They rolled Texas Tech. K-State barely beat Texas Tech. They're right there with Texas. Didn't play well against SMU. So I don't know which TCU team's going to show up, but K-State and TCU usually have some close games. That's the matchup coming up on Saturday at 2:30. Our focus on K-State athletics brought to you by Heineken Electric and Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, a new stadium has come to Kansas City. All right, downtown baseball, here we come. Not quite, but still pretty cool. I'm excited about it. The owners of Kansas City's professional women's soccer team, and for you out there, you might not even know there is a professional women's soccer team in Kansas City, but Patrick Mahomes' fiance, have they set a wedding date, by the way?
I have no idea.
You think Mahomes has problems now because he's a dad. Wait till he gets married.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. It's
issue.
A joke. It's a joke, people. It's a joke. For all this sarcasm for the people that think that Mahomes is messed up because he's a dad now. The owners of Kansas City's professional women's soccer team announced yesterday they plan to build a $70 million stadium for the team. The stadium for Kansas City NWSL will be the first built in the U.S. specifically for a women's soccer team. Kansas City NWSL owners Angie Long, Chris Long, and Brittany Matthews, that's Mahomes' fiance, announced the 11,000-seat stadium will be built along the Missouri River close to downtown Kansas City. It will be privately financed, which is important. Construction is expected to start next spring or summer with the stadium ready for use by 2024. Kansas City NWSL had previously announced plans to build a $15 million training facility in the Kansas City suburb of Riverside. So a new stadium, be a riverfront stadium, soccer stadium. I think that'll be cool, and it'll host other events too, concerts, who knows what else. So I think that's pretty cool and pretty exciting.
Yeah, I saw some of the drawings of it, and well, not drawings anymore; they're computer renderings. But
those always look good, by the way.
They look good. Look like it's in an interesting spot for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Release the Kraken! I have been waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's finally happened. The Seattle Kraken won their first home game last night. Dude, I'm telling you, they're on their way to the Stanley Cup championship. It's gonna happen. Okay, it's going to. I might not be alive when it happens. It might be many years from now. I'm just saying it might happen. I'm kind of like Mick Schaefer. I guarantee the Chiefs are going to play in January this year. Well, of course they are. They have two regular season games in January. I guarantee the Kraken win a Stanley Cup at some point, although that's not nearly a stone-cold guarantee as the Royals or the Chiefs playing two games in January because maybe they'll never win the Stanley Cups. I don't know. But all I know is Seattle Kraken won their first game ever in front of the home crowd in Seattle last night by a final of 5-2 over the Montreal Canadiens. And I know the record is 2-5, but this is the turning point of the season. I can feel it. Release the Krakens.